Okay, last week we ended by describing the period of persecution that began under Yavin, the king of Canaan, or more specifically, under his general Sisera. Yavin, the king of Canaan himself, was whatever, but Sisera was a world-class warrior. Well, as we've already discussed last week, he was basically the most powerful commander in the world at the time and had a very, very huge and mighty army, and he imposed a reign of terror on Eretz Yisrael, which basically reached a hopeless extent. Like, there was no realistic end to it. He had a massive army. We said last week it was 1.5 times the size of Paroi's when Egypt was a superpower. And the Jews were living in a very, very dismal situation. They were basically had to keep in locked cities. It was kind of like an anarchy kind of situation. They had to stay in closed cities, travel between cities, had to be through these roundabout ways, kind of through forests and things like that. And we saw even these small excursions outside of the city were accompanied by mamish, by terror. And besides that, Sisera was running a campaign of trying to put down and disparage as much as he could the Jewish faith and Hashem. He had a lot to say about Hashem. Apparently they weren't holding there yet, but they were building up to it. Then we introduced the Vayera. We said that yes, the Jews cried out to Hashem like they never had before. And we said last week, this was outdid all of the previous problems, in the sense that first of all, it was already for so long, and second of all, they didn't see any realistic way out, any natural way out. So that it reached an all low. 20 years. So they cried out to Hashem. And then we introduced Devarah. Devarah entered Devarah. So again, I'm just going to quickly sum up what we discussed last week, a little bit about her personality. So the Malbim says that this pasuk is actually Hashem's response to their cry, meaning the introduction of Devarah is actually beginning to describe the salvation. Hashem sent Devarah as a means of salvation. So let's start again the pasuk. We'll briefly review what we saw last week, and then we'll get into what's one of the most spectacular parshiyos in Sefer Shoftim. One of the most intriguing also. We'll see. This is a very unique parsha. Devaira Isha Neviya. Devaira was a prophetess, which already puts her on a very, very high level. As we've mentioned a few times, Rambam describes the very high levels, sublime levels that a person has to reach in order to merit prophecy. Basically, a person is completely detached from all physical interest, and a person's mind is always just tied up with Hashem 24 hours a day, etc. Eshes Lapidos. She was a woman of Lapidos, which also, as we explained, she was a fiery woman, a passionate woman, also a very deep intellectual. And she was married to Lapidos. She was married to a guy who had a fiery name. His name was possibly Barak, possibly not, whatever it is. And Malbag adds another point. She was a Nevi'ah of a level that when she prophesied, she was enveloped by flames. People saw flames around her. We're talking about a woman who was on a higher caliber than much of what the Jewish people had seen up till now. It's a very unique story that a woman soared so high. In fact, some say I'm not saying everybody, but than many people before. I mean, I don't know exactly which Shoftim, but Mefarshim stress that she was greater than Shoftim before.
Not more than?
I would imagine not. I would imagine not. It was Shamgar, and it was, I don't know. But like, for example, the Mefarshim do say that Osniel and Shamgar, and, well, this was actually going to get subject to Machloikis, but Osniel and Ehud and Shamgar were not Nevi'im, according to one approach, while she was. But that's also not so clear. There are certainly Chazals that say that Ehud was a Navi. Asniel, also there are some Midrashim that say it was a Navi. I'm not sure. Whatever it is, we're talking about a woman of a very, very unique level. In fact, some Mefarshim say, okay, but nevertheless, there was a David HaMelech later. Now, some Mefarshim say, now this is something I wasn't sure if I should say in a Shira or not, some Mefarshim say, she was such a great level of Nevuah, we don't find this anywhere except my Moshe Rabbeinu, that she left her husband because she was in a constant state of getting Nevuah. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu felt that he couldn't be married in his place. She, according to certain Mefarshim, she did the same thing. But okay, we're mentioning that for the record. As obviously would have to be explained. Okay, what? Perek Dalet. Pasuk Dalet. Now, Hishoiftais Yisrael Ba'isahi. She was judging the Jewish people at that time. This also is stressed. Why? Because the truth is, she was a woman, she did not have the authority of a shofet. People were not bound. It could be that at a later point they did become bound, but people were not bound by her authority. Anybody who chose to listen to her, it's all of his own accord. Now this also is stressed to the merit of the Jewish people. That the Malbim says that that's part of the point. They came to her. They recognized her greatness, and they came to her looking for instruction. Now, we take this further. She sat under the palm tree of Devaira, under a palm tree that she owned. Bein Haramo, bein Beis El Bahar Ephraim, which was between the Ramah and Beis El in the mountain of Ephraim. The Jewish people came to her for judgment. Now here also we're stressing something important. She was a woman and she did not change from being a woman. She was a very great woman, but yet she maintained the behavior of a woman. She was not out there teaching. She was not out there preaching. Other shaftim, we saw that it was a claim against them. The greater shaftim made a point of circling among Klal Yisrael, running around, making themselves available everywhere, going from city to city. She's praised for not doing so. She stayed home. It's not for a woman to be going out, going public, etc. She stayed. Her influence went out and spread. But she stayed. She stayed under her tree. People who wanted to come to her were welcome to come. Even then, it was not in a mismedrash. It was not in a private room. She sat under a palm tree. It throws some stress. Why a palm tree? Could be any other tree. Palm tree is the least private tree you can sit under. Palm tree is really tall. There's not much going up on top. And not very shady either. And that was where she had audiences with people. You wanted to come, you can come. And she instructed people from there. She wasn't active. She was a passionate instructor, etc. And she provided guidance for the Jewish people. But she did it keeping to the concept of tzniyus, right? Making it as least conducive as possible, and also just keeping to her place. People who wanted her came to her. And the truth is, we have to note, many people did not. Devairah influence did not contain all of Klal Yisrael. Chazal say that many of Klal Yisrael didn't listen to her, they didn't consider her an authority. She's a woman, right? Rebbetzin Mises, right? And for that very reason, that greatness of the people who did, the merit of that generation, and if the ones who did, is all the greater. Now, no, this is something that developed. Her status developed. Okay. Now, fine. Vatishlach Vatikro Libarak ben Avinoya. And then one day she up and sent for Barak ben Avinoya. Mikedesh Naphtali, from Kedesh Naphtali. Now, perhaps he was her husband, perhaps he wasn't. There are different, seem to be different implications on the matter. There are midrashim that say that he was her husband, and this led some of the mafarshim to say what we said before. She was living in Har Ephraim, he was living in Kedesh Naphtali. This is what leads the Rabbag and others to say that possibly because of her level of nevuah, she actually separated from her husband, just like Moshe Rabbeinu did. But otherwise, this wasn't her husband, and she had a nevuah that he's the man to call. So she sent, and she called for this Barak. Barak, yeah. Barak ben Avinoam. Barak ben Avinoam. Vatoymer elov. And she said to him, I have a prophetic message for you. Haleitziva Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Hashem Elokei Yisrael has commanded you. Lech u'moshachto b'har tovah. A crazy mission. Go and draw forth from Har Tavor. Go get together 10,000 people from the tribes of Naphtali and Zvulun. For what purpose? Go fight Sisera. This is the message. Now we have to understand how preposterous this was. 10,000 people. 10,000 people, if you're talking in terms of crowding this with Medrash, it's a large crowd. But basically, you know what it would look like? You know, you see a couple of buses going out from the Grosh Shul, you know what's going on? Well, we're going to fight North Korea. Are you serious? Well, it's not just us. There's buses coming from Eitz Tfilin and Osset Mordechai too. Right? A bunch of buses going out. 10,000 people. 10,000 people is not a big crowd in terms of an army. And they're going to fight the superpower. Now, we're talking about a man, Sisera, commanded the mightiest army in the world, and on top of that, Chazal say, that he had forces from all the other armies in the world. He had subjugated, he basically ruled, all the rest of the world were vassals to Sisera. He had concentrated a stronghold of leadership in that area called Charishas HaGoyim. There he had commanders with forces from all the other armies in the world who were happy to be a part of his forces. We're talking about a superpower, literally. And here we have, sorry? I don't know where it's located. And here we have this Barak ben Avinoam is being called and told, you know, make the rounds, go from shul to shul, bang on the bima, and come up with 10,000 people and go fight. That's quite literally what happened. We're going to see soon they weren't even properly armed. What's going on? So let's see. You head for Nachal Kishon. A creek called Kishon. I will draw toward the creek of Kishon, Sisera, and all of his chariots and all of his masses. I will deliver him into your hands. Now this also is being told as a miracle. I'm going to draw Sisera out there. Meaning, what actually happened was miraculous on two levels. First of all, 10,000 people come. We're talking about again. You send out the riot police, and you, it's not a big deal. A couple of tanks, and you look how they do it in. How they tried to do it in Syria and Israel, but there are ways of doing it. How you crush a demonstration of 10,000 people? What's a big deal? No, the Navi says Sisera is going to uncannily come with his entire army. He's going to rally all the troops, pull out the reserves. He's going to come with every last soldier. Why? So that the destruction should be absolute. The Chazal say that there was something else going on here also. There was another miraculous level of what was going on here. Whatever this means, Sisera was an astrologer, among other things, a jack of many trades, a capable guy. So, among other things, he was an astrologer, and he knew that on that day was not a good day for him to do battle. He would die. And yet Hashem said he'll come anyways. And that's why there was actually a prophecy that it'll work. It'll work. Hashem will miraculously draw Sisera out. Now, note though, that Hashem is not saying, I will miraculously get 10,000 people to join you. That not. That? Barak is going to have to go around trying to persuade people. Why? Because here Hashem is demanding a leap of faith on the part of the Jewish people. Meaning basically what's going on here is like this. there's a process here. We've already seen that there's a process that goes back and forth. The Jewish people reaching a level of worthiness, Hashem sends an opportunity. If they utilize the opportunity right, then they get salvation. So this is what was going on here to an extent. We have these people who were seeking truth. The people who were loyal to the Torah and accepting her instruction. This earned them the merit of salvation. But, right, look, you know, there's bureaucracy. There's spiritual bureaucracy. You know, sometimes you apply for a building permit in the city, and they approve it. Now pay. I mean, I was approved. That's right. Approved means that in the big picture, you qualify. Now pay. Right? There might be different things that you'll have to go through in order for it to happen. So Hashem is saying, okay, you qualify. And I'm actually issuing a prophetic notice that it's going to happen. A very, very spectacular salvation. But I want you to pay for it with a big leap of faith. I need to see 10,000 people coming out to take up this crazy battle. Right? 10,000 people, we'll see soon who they were. They were unarmed, basically unarmed. And they weren't warriors either. We'll see soon, school teachers. Right? They gathered together to scrape the bottom of the barrel. So this is what Hashem is saying. I want to see that leap of faith. When that happens, it's going to happen. And yes, I'm going to deliver into your hands. Now we'll see soon that actually, the fact that those 10,000 people did volunteer was actually considered mamish a miracle. You have to understand how ridiculous it was, how crazy this whole idea was. And later we'll see that yes, although it was through their bechira, the fact that 10,000 people were able to go for this, that Barak was able to hit the 10,000, Hashem said, there have to be those 10,000 people in order for this to work. The fact that he was able to scrape together 10,000 people was simply considered a miracle. So now, Barak realizes that this is a very, very difficult order to follow. Mela, you tell me to go out to war, I can do that. No, he's on the right level. I'm supposed to come up with 10,000 volunteers. So Barak says to her, in telchimi v'alachti, look, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to come bang on the bima in shul, people are going to throw me out, or they'll send me to an institution. If you come with me, is what to talk about. If I'm actually backed by you, and they see, the prophetess, the Vayra Hanavi is here, there's a chance. If you don't come with me, I'm not going to go. There's no, it's pointless. And this has to be explained, because it's a very severe issur to flout the word of another. What's he saying? If you don't come with me, I won't go. But what's that? It's also it's also you're not allowed to. It's actually a chiyuv misa, a person who doesn't obey a navi. So what's going on here? So the Mefarshim say no. He wasn't refusing. He was just saying, look, you imposed upon me to make it happen. I'm telling you the only way it could happen. The only way it could happen is if you join. So obviously that must be inherent in the nevuah. But the Ma'aseh of the Mefarshim give more halachic answers. They say first of all, two things. The concept, the issur, the severity of the issur of disobeying a Navi is only, the point is to uphold the authority of a Navi. If a Navi is commanding something that the Torah commands anyways, ironically, the severity of defying him doesn't apply. Because it's not an issue of undermining the authority of a Navi, right? You know what I'm saying? The problem with defying a Navi is that you're undermining the authority of Nevuah. But if all the Navi is coming and telling you is, you must keep Shabbos. You must keep Shabbos. And a person is Machal Shabbos Chas V'Shalom. It wasn't the fine Navi. Everybody knows that it says it in the Torah anyways. So therefore, actually what was going on here was, the Vayra really was telling him, there's a mitzvah to wipe out Canaan. They were talking already about one of the seven nations. There's a mitzvah to wipe out Canaan. Right now, there's a command for you to do it. It wasn't relevant for the period that they were ruling there. But
Hashem says that they can't do it anymore. Didn't the mitzvah
stop? No, the mitzvah didn't stop. Just they lost their capability of doing it. But the mitzvah remained in effect. Just that wasn't biyadam. So now he's telling him, no, the mitzvah is in effect, and Hashem is telling you to do it now. If he refuses, it's not the severity of disobeying a navi, because you're not undermining the navi's authority. It's something he's commanded to do anyways. But in almost an opposite vein, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshit says, sorry, That's what Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz says. The Minchas Chinuch says almost an opposite thing, that the same idea but kind of an opposite direction. The Isser to defy a Navi means when you're simply defying because you don't believe in what the Navi said. But let's say a person disobeys the Navi because he can't withstand the temptation, or because he can't overcome his fear. That's not the Isser. The Isser is defying, not disobeying per se. Defying. In this case, Baruch is saying, I can't do it. No, if you're not going to come with me, I can't do it. So whatever the case is, she accepts. And she tells him as follows. Vataymer, she said, Haloichei Reichimach, I'll come. Ephes. However, Ki loitia tif'artecho ala derech hasha'a tohilech. You're not going to gain much acclaim. You're not going to gain glory choosing this route. Because Hashem will deliver Sisera into the hand of a woman. What does she mean by that? Simply understood, she's saying, if I come, I'm going to be the main woman on the show, right? Everybody's going to be looking at me. I'll be the one who headed the battle. And you're not going to get credit. So you're giving up a chance to gain fame. Because they'll end up being delivered into my hand. But actually, the Mepharshim say that no, she was issuing another nevuah here too. She was talking about as follows. You should know that Lamaisa's sister is going to be killed by a woman, as we're going to see coming up later. Sister ended up being killed by a woman named Yael. We'll meet her soon. So she was telling him as follows. You are not going to get the credit of killing Sister. He's going to be killed by a woman. The war is going to be miraculous anyways. You're not going to be doing much. The only thing you could do is demonstrate bravery. That you'll get credit for. But by insisting that I come right along with you and cover your back, you're going to lose that too. The one thing that you could get out of this. But, nevertheless, he wanted it.
The result is still working. The result is still working.
He was doing it L'shem Shemayim. On the contrary. So Dvorah got up and went with Baruch to Kaddish. I will just note that again, the Mepharshim say that she was actually issuing another prophecy here, that Sisera will die at the hands of a woman. And this also is an important point that's being brought across here, as a Mida Keneged Mida here. Yeah, people like Eglon, right? Eglon was murdered by Ehud. You could say that that's a little bit more of a respectable way to go. Person was killed in battle. Also more of a respectable way to go. At that point, I don't know what difference it makes to somebody when he dies. I really cares afterwards how he went. But I guess what it says in the obituary was very important to people. And to be killed by a woman was considered the worst, the most ignominious way to go. The worst way to go. The biggest disgrace for a mighty warrior to be killed by a woman. And this was the punishment imposed on Sisera, because once again, Sisera was disgracing Hashem. We said before, he made a career out of blasphemy. He made a career out of giving lip to Hashem. And then what Hashem said, he puffed his chest up very much. He's going to be killed in the worst possible way. They have a person here where the whole world trembles because of him. And a cutesy woman is going to manage to wrap him around her finger and then boom, smash his head. So it's Mida Keneged Mida here. Okay, so now what happens? So now Barak is ready to approach his mission. So Barak went and rallied Zvulun and Naphtali to Kaddish. Now, we have to make an important point here. We were told that there is a 10,000 man requirement. But that doesn't mean that he was limiting the forces to 10,000 men. This is not like later we'll see cases where Hashem said, no more then. But this wasn't the case here. Here it was the other way around. Hashem was saying, I need to see a leap of faith on the part of the Jewish people. I need to see a leap of faith. The minimum shear, right? The minimum is 10,000 people. But Hashem wanted to see more than that. Lamaisa, there was a challenge here being issued to the people. Who's going to join? We'll see soon that at the end of the day, there were more than 10,000. They ended up being closer to 40,000, but maybe there should have been more. We'll see. We'll get there soon. But whatever the case is, the initial, the core was the 10,000 people from Naphtali and Kedesh, and from Naphtali and Zvulun, Vaya'al biraglov aseres alfeish, and he had 10,000 people following him by foot. Meaning, when I said buses before, I was wrong. Everybody was on foot. There were no horses, no chariots. These weren't warriors, right? These were people who had to take a week off from their school teaching because they needed to just go kill Sisera and his army. So, all relative. It's talking about different periods and all relative. We're still at a point in history where we'll see soon. There was supernatural warfare going on. We'll see. Now, Vatali Medvaira. So yes, Barak got together his 10,000 people, which was, we'll see soon, is a very, very big credit to the Jewish people that this actually happened. And the Vayera goes along with it. Now, in parentheses, the Chever HaKeni Nifrod Mikain. There was the Keni family. This was the family of Yisrael. We've already met them a few times in Sefer Shechem. They kind of had their own area. Basically, there were two concentrations of Yisrael's family. There was in what we call the Irat Marim, that area, that suburb of Yerichai, and down in Arad, down south, in what had been Asniel Ben Kenaz's yeshiva. And there was one family, there was a man named Chever from that family, who left. He was from the family of the Keni, from the children of Choyvav Yisrael, the father-in-law of Moshe. And he, for whatever reason, left his family area. Vayet olay ad eloin b'tza'ananim, and he went to these marshy areas, Asheres Kedesh. That was right near Kedesh, where all this action was starting to bubble. He happened years earlier, I don't know, years previously, we're noting that this person happened to move it just into that region. Because this is the right person, or the right household, in the right place, at the right time. The Malbim says, we're stressing here, Hashem orchestrated that. Might have seemed uncanny. Why did he pick up and leave his whole family? But no, it was divinely inspired. We needed him planted exactly here for our purposes. Now, yeah, as we'll see soon. Vayagidu l'Sisra ki ola Barak ben Avinayim har tova. So Barak ben Avinayim took his troops, ragtag troops. Again, they were barely weapons. They're all parading, you know, on foot. They gathered in Har Tavar, mountain of Tavar. Oh, and Sisera is told, well, there's a rebellion starting. 10,000 Haredis up on the mountain on Har Tavar. Now again, you have to remember 10,000 is, when you're talking in terms of a military, it's nothing. Talking about a demonstration, it just has to be squashed. But, as we saw, uncannily, Vayazek Sisera is kol Rikhboi. Sisera rallied all of his chariots, Chamei Rechev Bazel, as we saw before, those 900 iron chariots. We saw again, each iron chariot was like a whole, 900 was an immense amount. Paros, which was the superpower, was noted for having 600. That's Kola Amasher Itoi, and he rallied all the people he had with him. He pulled out all the reserves to the whole army. He pulled them out from Chareshes Hagoyim out to Nachal Kishon. Again, for some crazy reason, Sisera sees that, not a crazy reason, it's divinely inspired, but Sisera sees it necessary to come with all, you see, hundreds of thousands of soldiers, trained warriors, to fight these puny 10,000 Jews. So, what's going on? Barak is up with his bunch of people on Har Tavar, down on Nachal Kishon, Sisera's immense camps. So they're facing off, and Barak is hanging out at the top of the mountain. He wants to retain the advantage of heights, right? Barak, all of a sudden, Devarav says to Barak, "Kum, get up, ki zeh hayom asher natan Hashem et Sisera biyadecha." Because this is the day that Hashem has given Sisera into your hands. Meaning, in other words, she was telling him, no, there's no facing off here. Usually the way it works is, there's a lot of, you know, there's maneuvers, and there's this, and there's that. It takes a while until that fighting actually starts. And what happens is Sisera makes camp down at the bottom of Har Tovar by Nachal Kishon. Barak is up on the top, and Dvoira says, "No, no, there's no facing off, there's no nothing, no maneuvering. Get up and head down quickly, because it's today. It's happening today." Now, what was actually going on here? Why was she suddenly so agitated? So first of all, she was telling him, don't worry about holding on to the advantage of heights. Just go down. But we'll see soon that there was more. Halei Hashem yotzo lefanecha. This is an amazing thing. He says, this war was not meant to be natural. Hashem is coming to fight. Just Hashem wanted, you know, the Jews to kind of at least go through the motions. So the Torah told him, the Shekhinah is already there, it's happening already. The war started, the fighting has begun. Quickly get down there because you're missing it. That's what she was telling him. She sensed it. The Rabbi Yochanan Lubavitch says that, I mean, the Mefarshim might say this was going on, but he says that she sensed the presence of the Shekhinah coming down. And she said, if you're not down there in 2 minutes, you'll have missed the whole thing. So you better get down quickly, because otherwise there's no fight. So what happens? Now, by the way, she stresses, this is the day, the Mefarshim say, that day was designated, had to happen then. What day was it? This is the day. Anybody who's alert at Nirtzah might remember what day it was. It was Pesach night. She calls it, this is the day. And we say it in one of the Zmiris in Nirtzah, we say this is Laila Kiyan Yo'ir. That's a night that many points in history was lit up like the day. I don't think that means in a literal sense, but I mean to say that night has in it such a outpouring of spiritual radiance that it's a night that great, great, great things can happen. It's something we have to realize all the time. Every Leila Seder, realize, before you go to bed, before you just drop at the end, it's an unbelievable night for tefillah. And there were some of the greatest miracles in our history occurred on that night. That night is auspicious for these things, for unbelievable things. So this was that night. And she's rushing him. Barak, you gotta run. It's happening already. So Barak goes running down from Har Tovar with his 10,000 people on foot. You know, their pay is flying in the wind. They go running down the mountain. Hashem confounded Sisera. Hashem confounded Sisera and all the chariots and the whole camp by sword before Barak. What does it mean that Hashem confounded them? Let's first finish the puzzle. But that's basically the description of the battle. The description of the battle is Hashem confounded them. Vayered Sisera me'al ha'merkava, and Sisera is now showing his bravery. He was good at running too. Vayonas beraglav, he jumped off his chariot and he was off like an arrow. He's running fast. Now what's this Vayom? Chazal notes that there are a few places up until a certain point in history where this expression is used. Vayom, Hashem confounded the enemy, which means that it was just completely spiritual what was going on. There was nothing physical, there was nothing natural about the war. Hashem came, and there isn't anything to describe because it was just, you know, just bedlam broke loose. It says it about Vayom Hashem Esmachan Mitzrayim, right? Hashem confounded the camp of Egypt. It says it here, Vayom Hashem Esmachan Sisera, Hashem confounded the camp of Sisera. It says in the time of Shmuel also that Hashem confounded the Plishtim. And Chazal note that it's just until that period. After that, there wasn't that phenomenon. Chazal noted as a phenomenon of the way wars worked in those glorious earlier times. What's that? There it doesn't say Vayom. It was something else. That's part of the point. That's part of what's being conveyed here, is that there's something mysterious about the word Vayom. Even though there were miraculous wars later, Vayom, the confounding wasn't there. The confounding, Chazal say, was some sort of form of Hashem battling that was at those times when Chal Yisrael were at the greatest points that didn't replicate itself later. That's the thing. We don't know exactly. It's a mysterious kind of thing. Bayom, he confounded them. Now, Lamaisa, Chazal do tell us a couple of things. They say, for example, that the army of Sisera heard a massive army attacking them. Meaning they saw the Jews coming down. That wasn't a big deal. That was funny. But they heard. It's like just a panicky feeling. When you hear something right near you, you know it's there. you're here right there, and you're turning around, and you just don't see it. That's one thing that was going on. There are a couple of things that were actually going on, so we'll see a little more. But in a general way, it's that phenomenon of Vayahan, which might manifest in different ways, but it means there were these crazy things going on, which manifest, chaos, yeah, which manifests in one way in Mitzrayim, another way with the Plishtim. Here we will see a couple of the points, but what I want to stress is that besides the specific symptoms of the Vayahan, the point is the Vayahan. Hashem just caused chaos, bedlam. Now, so what happened? So we'll actually see in the Shira later a little more described what was actually going on. But I'll just tell it already now. The what happened was, they were coming, again we're talking about a massive army, a mighty army of trained warriors with the most sophisticated equipment. They were all dressed in chainmail, in metal armor. They were well equipped for war. They were dressed in metal armor. Now what Hashem did was, the stars are set up in the sky, all the stars have their effect on earth somehow, and the balance is perfect. Hashem messed the balance up a little bit. He moved stars out of place. I don't know how this works. And that caused an intense heat. That caused an intense heat which heated up the armor to the extent that they felt like they were being incinerated in an unnatural way. So what did they do? They were by Nachal Kishon, in the Creek of Kishon. The Creek of Kishon was an old, well-known, tame little creek. And they went into the creek to cool off. And all of a sudden, Kishon turned into a raging, overflowing river. All of a sudden, it just burst. Right? Something that never happened before. It was always a mild, tame little creek. But all of a sudden, it burst, and any of the soldiers who came close were simply swept off their feet. And they were swept away. And all the people who were in these chariots was the same thing, right? We had these noted chariots, the iron chariots. The chariots turned into infernos. They jumped out in order to get closer to the water. And the water, Mama said, we'll see later, swept them away. All this was going on. In other words, there was a whole war going on without Barak and his people being involved at all. That's what's going on here. What happens? Well, Barak, what was Barak's job here? His job was to clean up. So let's see. Now, by the way, while all this was going on, so we'll see when we get to the Shira, we'll see more descriptions of exactly the bedlam that was reigning there. But again, Sisera took off. He decided he was a fair weather friend. He took off and he ran by himself, meaning he saw. He understood. Apparently, he was spiritually attuned. He understood that things were lost. Most of the people, his army, were fleeing back toward Charosh HaGoyim, back toward their stronghold. He understood that this is a lost cause. He ran in the other direction by himself, figuring out, he'll figure out what he'll do. But he didn't want to be with them anymore. He realized that they were lost. Meanwhile, Barak had one job. They're all fleeing in bedlam. His job was to just run after them and kill them as he goes along. But the war, basically, Hashem creamed them, and now it's his job to just, you know, push it all the way through, nail it in. He's chasing after them. This is the Malbin stresses this. That was his job. There was nothing to do. Hashem was fighting. He just had to come and, you know, help them down. So he chased the chariots in the camp at Charosh HaGoyim, all the way back to that Charosh HaGoyim, the stronghold of nations. And all of Sisera's camp fell by sword. There wasn't left up until one. In other words, Mefarshim infers, same lashon as by Paro. Up until one wasn't left. One person was left. The whole camp was wiped out, as Sisera had figured. Right? That's why he decided he's putting his money elsewhere. They were all like that except him. He was the only survivor. And he's running in the other direction. And now, this is the story of the war. And now we get into the next leg of the story. Barak. He killed them. Yeah, apparently they had some sort of, we'll see soon. They were not properly armed. But apparently some knives they had. Maybe they took from them, right? It's also possible. There's plenty to take. What? Well, the truth is, we'll see soon. It's quite likely because it does say that when Nachal Kishon overflowed, it was mamish like Kriyas Yamsuf, the Jews were able to walk and actually chase comfortably. What? While the other ones were being swept away. So there was two things going on at the same time. The Midrash says it was mamish like Kriyas Yamsuf. I mean, what happened here, we have to realize that this is different than the wars of Othniel ben Kenaz, Ehud ben Gera was an assassination. This it must be noted as what's that? Yeah, as an outstanding event, which was ended up being footed, you know, put on the same level as Yeshua fighting Yericho, Kriyas Yamsuf, and some of the other most spectacular miracles in the experience of the Jewish people. This war. Now we move on to the next leg of the story, which we're really just going to introduce now. We'll see it next week. And here, I really have to daven for Siyata Dishmaya to convey this next part right, because this is an intriguing piece. Sisra nos beraglov. Okay, Sisra, he's still running. El oel yael eishes chever akeni. Now we come back. Remember, we referred to chever akeni, who, for some reason, exactly set up shop in that region. So Sisra is fleeing. He passes the tent of Yael, the wife of chever akeni. Ki shalom bein yavin melech chotzar ubein beis chever akeni. Because there was a certain truce between Yavin, the king of Chotzar, and between the household of chever akeni. So Sisra felt that now he's on friendly ground. Vateitze Yael likras Sisra. Yael goes out to greet Sisra. Vatoimer elov, and she said to him, she sees he's fleeing. Vatoimer elov, Suva adini, come away, my master. Suva elai, come away to me. We're supposed to read between the lines there. The story here doesn't spell out what was actually going on. In the Shira later, it's alluded to a little more. Chazal spell it out 100%. She was actually seducing him. But we'll see. We're gonna approach this slowly, because there's a lot going on here. So that's why the Megala Amukos actually says, again, the Navi often will hint at things which you have to be very attuned to the wording in order to pick up on it. But the wording here is, the Navi doesn't say what she actually was doing. But the Navi very clearly alludes to it. But they say Yael likras Sisra, Vatoimer elov, Sura elai. She went out to greet him and she told him, come away to me. So besides the fact that there's already that suggestive added, right? Come away to me. But also, it parallels the lesson of Vateitze Leo likras Yaakov. Right? Vatoimer elai tovoi. Leah went out to greet Yaakov and she said, come to me. So Magal Amukah says that the wording is deliberately parallel. Now she was doing this because this is what we're gonna have to discuss this properly, but this is what Chazal call Aveira Lishma. A very, very delicate concept which we'll have to address properly, of an Aveira done for the right reasons. This, she understood, was her opportunity to save the Jewish people. So, the truth is, Zahra was wiped out, but apparently, Sisra himself was such a force that he would have been able to rebuild an entire army from scratch. And that the salvation could not be considered as accomplished until Sisra himself was dead. Now, Altira, don't be afraid, she tells him. And he came to her into the tent, and she covered him with a blanket. Now here we'll just see in a very brief way the facts, and then we will elaborate more about Bezus Hashem. Well, let's just see the story. He said to her, Hashkini no ma'at mayim ki tzomesi. Please give me some water to drink because I'm thirsty. She changed the order. She brought a flask of milk. Why? Two things. First of all, she wanted to knock him out. wanted to make him as tired as possible. Number two, she wanted to see quite how alert he was. He was exhausted. She wanted to see if he would notice. She was really trying to figure out when she could make her move. Batashkeu, and she drank him. She gave him to drink. Batachaseu, and then she covered him again. Here also, the Mefarshim notes the Ma'amloyes notes the irony here. This is the mightiest warrior in the world. The whole world cowered before him. Now he's so furtive that he asks for a drink. He sticks his head out of the blanket, and he panicky. You know, he wants to be covered again. He's so terrified, right? We're making a point of stressing this, bringing this home. Hashem is ending his story in the right way. He tells her, please stand at the entrance to the tent. And if you see somebody coming along and asks, is there anybody here? Say there isn't. Mefarshim say that he was actually predicting what was going to be the truth. By the time someone would show up and ask if there's anybody here, she'd be able to say, no. We'll see. But the Malbim just adds one more point. We'll add one with this, even though we're in mid-sentence. He was drawing on Jewish morals. He said, usually, a search party comes, they're not going to ask questions, come in and search. They come to a woman's tent, they're not going to enter unless they know that the husband's there. So they're going to come and ask, is there a man in the house? If she says no, they're going to leave. If she says her husband is home, they'll come in and search. So that was, we're talking about people who are carrying out a very vital mission, but they wouldn't search a woman's tent if there's no man there. That's the Malbim. But we're in mid-sentence, as usual. We'll pick it up in the next